evening, we've heard one Christmas story, the Nativity, the birth of Jesus. It's told in two of the books of the Bible, both Matthew and Luke. And shortly, Dr. Philip Welch will read an excerpt from another Christmas story, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. This has become a tradition for us here at the UU Church of Halifax. Both of these are beautiful stories about redemption. The focus of the first story, the Nativity story, is on a poor family who gives birth to their first child in a stable. And the people who are chosen to hear first about the birth of Jesus are the shepherds in their fields. And the shepherds at that time were the lowest stratum of society. They lived outdoors with their animals. They were not highly respected. They lived in the fields where they weren't able to bathe. They were the lowest of the low. The second story, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, is likewise a story that focuses on the poor and the marginalized. The story of Christmas Carol is the story of bringing good news to the poor and the downtrodden. Stories like these can change the course of history, and they have. Janet and I recently attended a showing of the movie The Man Who Invented Christmas. And I'm sorry to say that it's not being played anymore over the holidays, which is unfortunate. That movie stars Dan Stevens, Christopher Plummer, and Jonathan Pryce. The man in question, the man who changed Christmas, is Charles Dickens. His story of the redemption of Ebenezer Scrooge would define Christmas, literally invent Christmas as we know it. A time for charity and goodwill to all men. I have it on good authority that the phrase Merry Christmas is the invention of Charles Dickens from The Christmas Carol. The movie opens with a scene from Dickens triumphant after his tour of the USA and celebrating his novel Oliver Twist. And that was before he suffered financial hard times. His next three novels were flops. And he was desperate to recover, and so he was inspired to write The Christmas Carol. Dr. Welch tells me that Charles Dickens visited Halifax in 1843 on his way to Boston and his U.S. tour. And he was greeted here by large crowds who came to hear him speak, as well as just see him in the streets. So Charles Dickens invented Christmas as we know it, or at least he helped to launch the mid-Victorian revival of the Christmas holiday. Prior to this, Christmas was not a big event. In fact, when he wanted to write The Christmas Carol and sell a book about Christmas, his publishers told him there was no market for stories about Christmas. He's been acknowledged as an influence on the modern observance of Christmas, and he's inspired several aspects of Christmas. Things like family gathering, seasonal food and drink, dancing and games, and the festive generosity of spirit. All are the result of this story, The Christmas Carol. And, finally, are you ready for this? Charles Dickens, the man who invented Christmas, was a Unitarian. There's no doubt that his sentiments were Unitarian for most of his life. He was opposed to formal creeds and dogma, and he was very much taken by the Unitarians that he met on his U.S. tour. This from the UU World magazine. On returning home from his U.S. tour, Dickens took a pew at the Little Portland Street Unitarian Chapel in London, and he became close friends with its minister, Edward Taggart. Dickens wrote in a letter, and I quote here, "Disgusted with our established church and its dogma, and the daily outrages on common sense and humanity, I've carried into effect an old idea of mine to join the Unitarians. We would do something Unitarians who would do something for human improvement if they could, and who practice charity and toleration. So now I invite Dr. Philip Welsh to deliver a reading from Dickens' The Christmas Carol.
As some of you may know, Scrooge is the principal character in the book A Christmas Carol. What was Scrooge? Well, Scrooge was what we would call a miser. Scrooge was a new name that Dickens thought up. Wasn't such a name before. But now, it's built into our language, that word as well. Sometimes you refer to someone and say, oh, he's an old Scrooge. That's where the name comes from Dickens's book. And what the story tells is that Scrooge, who was certainly didn't give away his money and didn't want to give anybody anything, started off as one of that type. He also had a colleague who died earlier, and according to the story in A Christmas Carol, his buddy who died earlier decided that he wanted to come back as a ghost and see if he could persuade Scrooge to have a different line of thought. So he told Scrooge in a dream that he was going to have to meet three spirits who were all involved with Christmas. The first was the spirit of Christmas past, Christmas long gone. The second was a ghost representing Christmas present. And the third would be a ghost representing Christmas in the future. So I'd like to read to you a bit of the story that relates to Scrooge's interaction with the ghost of Christmas present. And in this extract, Scrooge and the ghost of Christmas present stood in the city streets on Christmas morning because the weather was severe. The people made a rough but brisk and unpleasant kind of music in scraping the snow from the pavement in front of their dwellings and from the tops of their houses, whence it was mad delight to the boys to see it plumping down onto the road below and splitting into artificial little snowstorms. For the people who were doing the shoveling and also up on the roof with a snowstorm because the housetops had got lots of snow on top. They were all, the people doing this were jovial and full of glee. They were calling out to one another from the parapets and now and then exchanging a facetious snowball, a better natured missile than many a wordy jest, laughing heartily if it went right, and no less heartily if it went wrong. The poulterers' shops were still half open, and the fruiterers were radiant in their glory. There were great round, pot-bellied baskets of chestnuts, shaped like the waistcoats of jolly old gentlemen, lolling at the doors and tumbling out into the street in their apoplectic opulence. There were ruddy, brown-faced, brown-girthed Spanish onions shining in the fatness of their growth like Spanish friars and winking from their shells in wanton slyness at the girls as they went by, glancing demurely at the hung-up mistletoe. There were pears and apples clustered high in blooming pyramids. There were bunches of grapes made in the shopkeeper's benevolence to dangle from conspicuous hooks that people's mouths might water gratis as they passed. There were piles of filberts, mossy and brown. The very gold and silver fish set forth amongst these choice fruits in a bowl, though members of a dull and stagnant blonded race, appeared to know that there was something going on, and to a fish they went round, grasping round and round their little world in slow and passionless excitement. The grosses. Oh, the grosses. That were nearly closed with perhaps two shutters down or one. But through those gaps, such glimpses, it was not alone that the scales descending on the counter made a merry sound, or that the canisters with money were rattled up and down like juggling tricks, or even that the blended scents of tea and coffee were so grateful to the nose, and even the raisins were so plentiful and rare, and the almonds so extremely white, the sticks of cinnamon long and straight, and other spices so delicious, the candied fruits was caked and spoilt with molten sugar, so as to make the coldest onlookers feel faint. Nor was it just that the figs were moist. And the people, and moist and pulpy, or that the French plums blushed in modest tartness from their highly decorated boxes, or that everything was good to eat and in the Christmas dress. But the customers were all so hurried and so eager in the hopeful promise of the day that they tumbled up against each other at the door, clashing their wicker baskets wildly, and left their purchases upon the counter and came running back to fetch them, and committed hundreds of the like mistakes in the best humour possible, while the grocer and his people were so frank and fresh that the polished hearts with which they fastened their aprons behind for general inspection. The day, however, was gloomy, and the shortest streets were so choked up with a dingy mist. But for all that, the people were shoveling away on the housetops and full of glee, calling out to one another from the parapets, and now and then exchanging a facetious, better-natured missile far than many a wordy jest, and laughing heartily if it went right, less heartily if it went wrong. But soon the steeples called all good people to the church and the chapel, and away they came, flecking through the streets in their best clothes and with their gayest faces. At the same time, there emerged from scores of by streets, lanes, and nameless turnings, innumerable people carrying their dinners to the baker's shops to have it cooked. They had no fire or oven to cook them, these poor revelers. And the sight of these appeared to interest the spirit of Christmas present very much, because he stood with Scrooge beside him in a baker's doorway, and taking off the covers as the bearers passed with their dishes, sprinkled some incense on their dinners from the torch that he carried. And it was a very uncommon kind of torch, for once or twice when there were angry words between these same dinner carriers who had jostled with each other, he shed a few drops of water on them from it. Their good humour was restored directly. For they said it was a shame to quarrel upon Christmas Day. And so it was. God loved it. So it was.